Okay, before I start, let us pay homage to the Buddha first by reciting Namo Tassa three times. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Since you all practice meditation before, may I know what is the aim of your meditation practice? What do you aim? Can you share? Anybody want to share? What do you aim? Okay, purify the mind. Some more?
Calm the mind.
Calm the mind. Some more? Your aim, your own aim. Why you want to meditate?
Peace.
Peace. Some more?
Free from all the sufferings.
Free from all the suffering. Okay. Okay. All these are your own aim, which is according with the teaching of the Buddha. But I want to tell you, when you come to meditation, free from all expectation. Okay? Although you may expect, I want to have peace of mind. I want to free from all suffering. I want to purify my mind. When you come to real sitting meditation, free from all expectation. Don't expect anything to happen in your meditation. You know, one of the aim of the teaching of the Buddha is to realize non-self nature of phenomena. So if you practice, I want to free from suffering, I want to free from suffering, you practice with an ego. Although this no noble aim, but when it comes to practical experience, forget it first. I want to have peace of mind. And the mind is so restless, like monkey running here and there. How to have peace of mind? And because you aim to have peace of mind and the mind is restless, then you get very upset with your meditation. Right? Therefore, you know you have aim in your meditation, but come to actual sitting meditation, let go of it. Don't think of it. What you should think of is your meditation subject. No wonder, no matter you practice like Mahasi method, rising and falling, or Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, or any method you use, just keep your mind on your meditation subject and free your mind from all expectation. Another word, keep your mind at the present moment. So the meditation, the first, as a Theravada tradition, we emphasize our meditation following the Satipatthana Sutta. You know Satipatthana Sutta? Anyone of you do not heard about it? Only one. So all of you know Satipatthana Sutta, right? So put up your hand if you never heard about it. Oh. Four Foundation of Mindfulness. Have you heard about it? Four Foundation of Mindfulness. How about Nanand? No. You say you all have meditation experience, but you all never heard about Four Foundation of Mindfulness. That's very amazing. Okay, since you don't know, I will share with you. The four foundation of mindfulness in Pali we call Satipatthana Sutta. In the Buddha's dispensation, this Satipatthana Sutta, four foundation of mindfulness, is very, very famous and accepted by all traditions, including Theravada, Mahayana, and Vajrayana. So as a practitioner, we must have some knowledge about this four foundation of mindfulness. And the practice of meditation is to first develop mindfulness, right? We always heard about mindfulness, mindfulness, mindfulness. Sati, sati, sati is Pali word. Sati, sati, sati. Now comes the question. Where the sati should be established? Or sati, mindfulness, where the mindfulness should be established? Or mindfulness should be established at what places? We say you must develop sati. You must develop sati. How? How to develop sati? How to develop mindfulness? So in this sutta, Buddha says four foundations of mindfulness. I will explain to you what mindfulness later on, but now I want to tell you how to establish your mindfulness according to what the Buddha said. Okay? First, you have to establish your mindfulness on your body. On your body. We call kaya nupassana satipatthana. Kaya means body. Nupassana, anu. Kaya anupassana. Kaya body, anu means repeatedly. Passana means seeing. Not seeing with eyes. Seeing with insight, knowledge. So, seeing repeatedly your body. Or keep your mindfulness on your body repeatedly. Then you may ask, keep the mindfulness on the body repeatedly. What is the aim? What is the purpose? Right? What do you think? What is the purpose? Why should we keep the mindfulness onto the body repeatedly? What is the purpose? As a practitioner, you have to understand the purpose well. Only then you know why you must do like that, why you must not do like that, right? So what's the purpose to keep the mindfulness on the body? I assume all of you have some good knowledge. If not, you will not be inspired to become monk and nun, right? So what's the purpose to keep the mindfulness onto the body? Yes, one of the reasons is that to avoid the mind going crazy, to avoid the mind going here and there, or to avoid wandering mind. Simply because wandering mind has no power at all. Wandering mind has no power at all. You will come to understand when you have some concentration. So this first aim, to stop the wandering mind. The nature of the mind is if you, without anchoring your mind on one object, it will go here and there, goes to the past, aim to the future, or go to all fantasy, dreaming, daydreaming, and so on and on. This type of mind is full of suffering, but you cannot see it yet because you have no concentrated mind to see how the mind suffers because of wandering thoughts. So the first aim is to stop the wandering mind by anchoring your mind on the body. Okay, it's clear? Okay, the second important, the most important point why you should keep your attention on the body repeatedly, because you want to see the true nature of the body. Why you want to see the true nature of the body? Why? Good. To see the true nature of the body as impermanence, as suffering, as non-self. Then the question follows, why should we see impermanent suffering and non-self of the body? Why? Now you can see the style of my teaching, keep on asking you why, to let you think, which you never think before, right? You just meditate, never think of why I should do like that, why I should not do like that.
To prepare a mind to understand the mind, the emptiness, sunyata.
The emptiness of what?
Sunyata.
Sunyata?
Sunyata.
Sunyata, emptiness, okay. Any other answer? To deduce? Very good. Excellent. The purpose we want to see the anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanence, suffering, and non-self of the body, because we want to let go of the attachment of it. Why should we let go of attachment of it? Simply because attachment is the origin of all suffering. Good. This is the purpose. Now, do you have attachment to the body?
Yes.
Yes. And you find delight in it, right? But how about when the body change? Let's say some sickness, afflictions, cancer, tumor suddenly arise in the body. Before that, you never prepare for it. Now there's sickness come. Are you going to take it with equanimity, or you take it with upset, downhearted, and all the stress? I think most people will regard the change of body with all sorrow, lamentation, and despair, because you never think such thing will occur to your body. And because of that, we have strong attachment to the body, right? And the purpose of practice is to see the true nature. We attach to a body because we not yet see the true nature of the body. And the practice of meditation is to see the true nature of the body so that you can let go your attachment to it. Letting go attachment to it is equal to happiness. It's equal to the end of suffering. This is what your answer. Yeah, just now you say to end the suffering. Now I'm telling you why you should meditate. What should you see? After seeing that, how your mind changed. Then your mind changed. Then you no more treat the body as I, as happiness, as permanent. So whatever happened to your body, you already know it changed. So what? So you can maintain the equanimity of the mind. And this is the source of happiness. Got it? Okay? Okay. So the first mindfulness should be established on the body. Okay. The second one, the mindfulness, this one way you can develop your mindfulness. The second way to develop your mindfulness is to apply your mindfulness on your feelings, vedana nupassana sati patthana, your feelings. How many types of feeling you have? According to your daily life experience, how many types of feeling you have?
Two types.
What are they?
Happy.
Pleasant
and unpleasant. Only two?
And neutral.
Neutral, right. You must remember these three types of feelings, because these three types of feelings are the object of your contemplation, are the objects for you to develop your mindfulness. So first, pleasant feeling. So when you go for your meal, when the delicious food touch your tongue, and because you're so hungry, so you have pleasant feeling. How many of you contemplated that pleasant feeling? How many of you forget, become so hungry, I just want to eat, satisfy my hunger, right? Okay, so one is pleasant feeling. Okay, now I ask you a question. Where the pleasant feeling comes from?
Contact.
Yeah, first is contact. For example, you go to the kitchen, now go to the dining hall, the delicious food come to the tongue. Wow, pleasant feeling. Ah, spread all over the body. You say, how nice. You didn't speak up only, but in the mind say, how nice. So that pleasant feeling come from tongue contact. And when the eye sees something beautiful, ah, the environment is so nice. We sit and look at the environment here. We have also pleasant feeling, right? That pleasant feeling come from eye contact. Similarly, when somebody point out your fault, you feel unpleasant, right? You feel very unpleasant. That unpleasant feeling come from ear contact. So, pleasant feeling and unpleasant feeling come from six types of contact. Eye contact, ear contact, nose contact, tongue contact, body contact, and mind contact. For example, here, first day you are here, you feel suffering as a monk and nun. Suffering, then you think of the past, you might think of past. Now, as a lay person, I can do whatever I want. I don't have to follow all the rules here. So you might think of past and you think of the present, the happy life as lay person. That mind contact can give you pleasant feeling as well, because you remember the past. So the pleasant feeling and unpleasant feeling come from six types of contact. Not only contact, it also depends on the nature of the objects. For example, you never liked spicy food. When the spicy food comes to your tongue, there's tongue contact. But the food is not agreeable with you. So can you have pleasant feeling? No, right? No. You just have unpleasant feeling because the nature of the food is not agreeable to you. So the nature of the object, the six type of object, visible object, where the eye, your eye come into contact with beautiful object, then pleasant feeling arises. With contact with unpleasant object, then unpleasant feeling. Similarly, nose, ear object means sound. Nose object is what?
Smell.
Tongue object is taste. Body object is
touch,
tangible. And the mind object is your thinking. Your thinking of good or bad, past, future, and so on. So when the object, these six sense objects are pleasant, you have pleasant feeling. When these sense objects are not pleasant, you have unpleasant feeling. So is a pleasant feeling and unpleasant feeling impermanent or permanent?
Impermanent.
Impermanent, right? Because it depends on various factors. Depend on the contact, present contact, or depend on the nature of the object itself. So when the nature object is pleasant, then your feeling is pleasant. When it's suddenly change, object change, then your feeling also change. Therefore, all feelings are impermanent. This is the way you can see impermanent if you contemplate your feelings. Okay, is it too much for you? No, okay. I tend to give too much information to my student. I must make sure that you are with me. Okay, so this is the second object, second foundation you can establish mindfulness. Okay? What is the third one?
Perception.
No. Okay, perception can be, but according to foundation of mindfulness, the third one is mind object. M-I-N-D. Citta nupassana sati patthana. Mind object. What type of mind you have? In a day-to-day life, what mental state you have?
Wandering mind.
Okay, wandering mind is one. Some more? Your own experience in your daily life. Unwholesome are so many.
Greed.
Greed, okay. Some more?
Ignorance.
No anger. You have no anger? Anger. Some more? No sleepiness? Sleepiness. Some more?
Hatred
and anger is the same. No doubt? Doubt. Do you have doubt? Yes, doubt. Some more? Wondering, mentioned already. Concentrated mind, right? Sometimes you have some concentration, so mind is concentrated. Concentrated mind. Some more? Worry, yes, good. Worry and anxiety. Some more? Your own mind.
Restlessness.
Mentioned already.
Happy.
Happy mind, yes?
Yeah?
Fear. Fear, right? Fear is a great hindrance. Some more? Yeah, conceit, competition, jealousy,
bias,
prejudice. I think all of us experience all these different states of mind, right? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, when this different state of mind arise in you, how you behave towards them? How? How you react towards them?
Huh? Depends on the condition of your mind.
Okay, say anger mind.
What?
Anger mind.
Anger.
How
angry,
you? Angry, yeah. How you react?
You react very aggressively.
You act aggressively. Okay, greed mind. How you behave towards your greed when it arises in your mind? When your mind is greedy, how do you act? You should understand.
Temptation.
You want more, right? When the mind is greedy, you want more. For example, the man's eye look at come to contact with a beautiful woman. You want to see more. This is called your reaction, right? When the food is delicious, you won't stop there. One more. This is called reaction towards greedy mind. Okay. So when your mind is slow and topper, how you react? I say, "Aiyah, the bed is so nice. Why not I go back and sleep?" Sometimes you react in this way. Or you just let your head drop down. Huh? Am I right? Okay. So when your mind is in fear, how you behave? When your mind is in fear, fearful state, how you react to your fearful state of mind? No fear?
Avoid.
Run away. There's no way to run. If there's no way to run, going back to the breath. Some more? You never experience fearful mind? Any of you? Experience fearful mind or not?
Yes
or no?
Yes.
The novice? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, how you react to your fear? Cannot sleep. I want to listen to the Samanera's answer.
Together with the worry and anxiety again.
to add more fear again. To add more anxiety. Okay, let's say I give a situation. Let's say you put a book early in the morning, 4 o'clock. You come into the dining meditation hall. There's nobody, and you don't know where is the light. But then you bring in the book and put next to you. Then you start meditation. After 10 minutes, you heard the book start flipping. Flipping. Okay, at that time, how do you feel?
Restless.
Only restless, no fear.
Restless,
then fear. At this situation, there's no one, and you just put on the book, and you see the book flipping, and there's no one around. I think most of you, or most of her will be run away, quickly go out. Or you want Or any of you want to open your eye and see?
No?
No? How to run away? So when the fear arises in you, check your mind. How are you going to deal with your fear? I remember.
Paralyzed.
Huh?
Paralyzed.
So serious. Paralyzed.
Fear sometimes
can cause paralyzed. That is very serious. That is that we harm ourselves. No one hurt us, right? No one hurt us. Simply, we hurt ourselves by imagination, right? How you know it's true? How you know it's ghost? But we imagine. So that imagination kills us. No one kills us. I never hurt anybody killed by ghost in my life. I never hurt. But I heard a story, some people die because of ghost. But I understand, this person died because of his own fear, out of imagination. Okay, so it's very important to be able to note, to contemplate your fear. And now you know the fear can cause heart attack, even death. So I share with you one of my story. That's in China. As I said, we started at 4:30. And I get up at 4 o'clock, walk to the meditation hall, and no one. So dark, I also don't know where the light. Where is the switch? So I don't care. Just go in, and I put my paper for my talk. I put my paper next to my table, and I sit on the ground. And so dark, cannot see anything at all. After 10 minutes, the paper start to flip. Initially, usually I am not afraid of ghost. Why? Because even the paper flips, I will never think of ghost. My mind never come to contact with ghost. I think this is my courage. But before that day, previous night, one monk just showed me a ghost story. Just a ghost story, the spirit go into somebody and a man is trying to talk to the ghost, and this person, the body is shaking very violently. And when this person go out to the, he showed me the video, and when this person, where the spirit go into his body, when he went out to the door, he suddenly turn his neck. His neck can turn to 180 degrees. We only turn 90 degrees, right? Human only can turn 90 degrees. And this person turned 180 degrees. At that time, the person who treated him, he was smoking. When he saw his head turn into 180 degrees, his secret all fell down. He also was in great shock, right? It means that he's not normal. How can a person's head turn to 180 degrees unless the ghost turning his head? Okay. So I just saw that video. And next day when I went to hall and the paper flips without anybody around. So I start thinking of that video. Suddenly I said, no, this is not my mind. This is not my mind. So I cool down. Nothing will happen to me. I just contemplate my fear. I check whether I'm fearful or not. First, yes, because I'm not mindful. I see the fear arise because I think of a video, so the fear arise. Then I suddenly know, this is my own imagination. I say, this is my own imagination. Then I let go of the fear, then go back to my breath. Nothing happened to me. I can sit through whole meditation without being disturbed by this, the paper flipping by itself. So after the meditation, I am a curious person. I don't believe the paper will flip. So I come and investigate why the paper flips. Simply because I put there, the paper already half open. Half open, so maybe after 10 minutes, the paper start to flip. not because of ghost. So in my life, I never afraid of ghost. Therefore, I want to share with you, when the fear arises in you, note it, contemplate with it. Are you fearful of something which is not yet happened? Right? You are fearful of something which is not real. It's out of your own imagination. And since we are talking about the ghost, let us share with you one more experience. Before I came here, I think 10 years ago, one of the lady who came to see me, and her eyes is not normal at all, not normal. When I see her, I know she's not normal. And she say, her mother says she got depression. I said, I think more than that. And she started to tell me the ghost in her body. No wonder her mind, her eye is, you know, not normal at all, not human, not ordinary eyes. So I said that, then she told me the ghost in her body, the ghost is controlling her. Then I say, why you let the ghost controlling you? Then she say, I want to help her because the ghost is suffering. Now she need her help in order to reborn in heaven or to reborn in Kedah, one of the state of Malaysia. I say that if she's controlling you and make you suffer like that, how can she be reborn in heaven? Right? A spirit controlling her and make her suffer. Her mother suffer more than her because her mother saw she is so abnormal. So her mother suffer more than her. So out of compassion, I said, how can she reborn in heaven if she had make you suffer and make her family suffer so seriously? Then the lady start to tell me, say, sister, please talk to the ghost. Ask me to talk to the ghost. I say, how am I going to talk to the ghost? I only talk to you, you talk to her, right? You are the medium. I talk to you, you convey my message to her. So I start to talk to her. Then she start to, when I talk to her, then she will talk to the ghost and come back to me. This is the first time I deal with the ghost. My first time I deal with the ghost. So I say, okay, you cannot do like that. You want to reborn in heaven or you want to reborn in human world again, you have to leave her body because you are creating suffering in her and in her family. Then I say, then she asked me, what should I do? She said, okay, tomorrow you come for Dana. Dana, you give me your name, I transfer Mary for you. Okay. Then after that, I say, okay, you can go already. Then they go. Tomorrow, I'm waiting for her to come back. Unfortunately, when the Dana offering time comes, she didn't turn up. I say, although I want to help her, but she may not have that good karma to be helped by me. Then I let go of it. But after, during the meal time, they come. The parent come. And the mother so happy, her face changed already. Then after that, after my meal, I asked her, okay, anything to talk to me? Then he said, yes, my daughter want to talk to you. And the doctor and her daughter approached me. The moment I saw her, I know she is normal already. Her eye is normal, like human being already. And she told me that, sister, yesterday when I went back home, the spirit has left my body already. The spirit has gone. Okay, so therefore, I think why I can deal with the spirit, because the power of fearlessness, the power of fearlessness based on compassion, based on metta, wanting to help other people. So come back to the mental state. So we have different state of mind. Angry mind, fearful mind, greedy mind. When they arise, if we react according to our mental state, we are not a practitioner. A practitioner will not react to any unwholesome state. Instead, a practitioner directly face to face to that unwholesome mental state. For example, greed. A mind affected by greed that has arisen in your mind, you just watch it, mindful of it. How to be mindful of it? Just see it as an object and mentally note a mind affected by greed as a mind affected by greed repeatedly. What's the purpose of noting, contemplating in this way? First, when you see a mind affected by greed as a mind affected by greed, then you do not think the greed is myself. Right? If you do not contemplate in this way, when the greed arises in you, you say, I'm greedy. And then fear arises in you, you say, I'm fearful. And because of the clinging to the I, ego, self, then you are hurt by your own projection of the mind. No one can hurt you. Your own projection, wrong projection of the mind. Simply, you take all the unwholesome state of the mind as myself. I, myself. That hurts. Are you with me? Okay, yeah. This is not the simple Dhamma. It's a profound Dhamma. So whatever mental state that arises in you, you can establish your mindfulness, simply aware of it. Take it as an object of contemplation, angry mind as angry mind. Fearful mind as fearful mind. Considered mind as considered mind. Peaceful mind as peaceful mind. Sorrow mind as sorrow mind. Anxious mind as anxious mind. Don't see anxious mind as myself. Anxious as myself. Greed as myself. Anger as myself. If you regard the mental state in this way, you are bound to react. And that reaction is called karma in the teaching of the Buddha. That reaction is called karma, action. And every karma leaves behind karmic energy. And that karmic energy, when it ripens, it produces its effect on you. Then you will suffer according to the previous karma you perform. Maybe through some external force, for example, somebody bully you. Somebody bully you and you suffer physically and mentally. And at that time, you bear the anger towards the one who bully you, right? But we often forget that incident is just a ripening of our own karma performed in the past. Because in the past, when the anger might arise, we think that anger is ourselves, then we act impulsively and we hurt someone. Because the anger has to be released. How to release the anger? Through body action, through verbal action. So when the verbal action and bodily action are performed, that leave behind karmic energy, that hindered or slipping in along your mind continuum. Your mind continuity until a time comes when all this karmic energy ripen, then the effect, the resultant pop up, then you suffer physically as much as you have caused pain to others. You suffer as much as the pain you cause to others. So why should you suffer? Please answer, why should you suffer? Why should we suffer? Simply because we do not control our mind at that time. Simply because we do not control the mind when the unwholesome state of the mind arises in us. We do not control it, but we follow after it. That causes suffering to ourselves and to others, and not only that, that paves the way for the future suffering as well. Yes? Okay. Yeah. So whatever karma we perform, whether mentally, physically, and bodily, it leaves behind karmic energy. Unless you are arahant, right? As long as you are not arahant, whatever action, including now, let's say I give Dhamma talk, is wholesome karma. This wholesome karma leaves behind very wholesome energy along my mental stream. In the samsara, the mental stream is keep on going on, never stop. Mental stream keep on going, never stop. So whatever good karma I perform, it follow the mental stream until a time this good karma of preaching the Dhamma ripen. Let's say the seed ripen, it sprouts, grow into a tree. Therefore, when this karmic energy ripen, then I will bear the wholesome resultant or wholesome effect or good effect of my previous preaching the karma, preaching the Dhamma. Similarly, now all of you sitting here listening to Dhamma talk, which is wholesome karma. And this wholesome karma also will follow your mental continuum, your mental continuity, as long as you are not arahant yet. Follow you, and it reach a time this karma energy ripen, then you will reap the wholesome resultant, the wholesome result. So you are blessed. You will be blessed by all the wholesome effect. For example, you will meet with wise karyanamita. You will meet with wise person. You will be helped by others. You will be supported by other people. All this good karma, good resultant, not come by praying. Not come by praying to God, not come by praying to Buddha also. Come from your own action, your own beautiful action in the past. Similarly, now you come to Ladakh for ordination for 2 weeks. It is a great merit. It's a very highly wholesome mentally, physically. Because mentally you have that desire to become monk and nun first. Then physically you carry out the life of monk. So this great merit, this great wholesome energy will continue follow your mental continuity to the point then it becomes ripened. When it ripens, then you will be blessed in your life. You will meet with all the blessing in your life. So who bless you? Your own wholesome action. So as a practitioner, we must understand we are the owner of our own karma. We are born by our karma. We are a heritage. We are the heir of our own karma. This should be reflected every day as a nun and monk. Okay? So if somebody hurt us or somebody caused us physical pain, who should be blamed? Our past unwholesome karma. If you can think in this way, your hatred will cease immediately. You will not find revenge to the person who inflict pain to you, right? Because you understand, I hurt him previously. Now, as a result, of my previous unwholesome karma, now I am hurt. This person who hurt me is only a medium. You know, a medium? It's just a medium. It's just a ripening of karma that he is a medium that caused pain to me. If you do not think in this way, you will generate a lot of hatred towards this person. And the more you hate him, the more you will meet him in your life to come. Right? Do you want to meet anyone who hurt you? Don't want, we don't want. If you don't want to meet anyone who hurt you, then you bear no grudge to him. You bear no grudge to him. If you bear no grudge to him, you will not meet him anymore in your future life. But if you hate him, okay, because of that hate, you are going to meet him again and again, again and again. They say Chinese saying, yan jia lu zai ya. It's this reason. Why? Because you generate the hate in you. And that hate is the karma that make you to meet with him again and to continue that hate. Understand? Okay.
Yeah. If let's say if ourself had let go, no hatred on the person, but the other party hatred you. So in next life, will we meet again?
Maybe. But even if we meet again, it's no problem for us. Because we don't have hate to him, right?
But he will still create problems?
No. The power of the metta is imaginable. The power of metta is unpredictable.
How to eliminate their hatred?
You send loving kindness. Yes. Loving kindness meditation can eliminate the hate he had to you. But it also depends on the power of your metta. If your power, the power of metta is not sincere, then if the metta is not so sincere, the power also will become less. Okay? Any question?
Yes, I have one.
Yeah.
Metta, can you explain what is it?
Metta is loving kindness meditation. Loving kindness, we wish everyone in the world be well and happy, including our enemy. Okay. Yes.
Sorry, I have one question.
Okay.
Just now you said that our karmic energy is actually carried by this mental stream.
Yep.
Is it a consciousness or is it some kind of memory or what?
It's the energy. Energy cannot be seen through our eyes, right? Energy will follow. Whatever action we perform, good or bad, that energy follow the mental stream. When we die, let's say, we pass away, we die. We cast away the body. But the mental energy is still going on. That karmic energy follows that mental energy.
Is this some sort of related to a memory? If let's say we forget the things that we did in good thing that we did in the past, does it mean that this good thing will appear or will not appear?
It will appear. Any energy, whether you remember it or not remember it, when the time, the ripening of karma is very important. When the factors, all the factors are fulfilled, then the resultant will take place. For example, a seed, you throw a seed on the ground. You must wait for the right time, right? When there's moisture, rain, sunrise, fertile soil, then the seed, one day the seed will sprout. So the sun ray, rain, moisture, the fertile soil are the factors, important factors for the seed to produce its effect. Similarly, for the karma to produce its effect, the favorable conditions are needed. So when the karma will produce its effect, no one knows. No one knows. Okay, any other question? Asking questions make you wise.
I had one related to the subject's ignorance.
Okay.
And hate at the same time. I can just ask about my personal view of it.
Okay.
Actually, I don't hate people.
Mm, good.
But I hate ignorant actions.
You hate ignorant
actions.
Action, okay.
For me, it's a big problem when I see something do something wrong, and they are not aware.
You yourself do wrong or other people?
No. When I see people
do wrong,
something wrong,
okay,
and I'm not aware, and don't want to be aware, it's really difficult.
Because you don't want to see, right? Is it? You don't want to accept that people do wrong.
If I do something wrong, and I perceive that I do something wrong, I try to correct it. If I'm not able to see it, I'm thankful if someone advised me I did something wrong.
Good.
But I think the ignorance is not only don't know something, but ignore something.
Yeah.
Ignore the truth, ignore what is correct, what's wrong or not.
Yeah.
And this produces a very big hate on me. It's really difficult to deal with that. But you can recommend.
I think practice more compassion. Compassion. Your attitude is correct. You don't like something, you don't like to see, you don't hate people, but you hate ignorance. Right? This is very good attitude. Because you don't see people, you only see ignorance itself. The world is full of ignorance. So I think if we generate compassion for the ignorant, because all are ignorant. If we are not ignorant, we already become arahant, right? So, including ourselves, sometimes we are also ignorant. So we should have compassion and acceptance, patience toward the ignorant itself, not the person, the ignorant itself. Therefore, the person need to be educated, need to be exposed to Buddha's teaching. Need to be exposed to the truth. So if we can see in this way, I think our hate also will become less. And also it takes patience. We have to be very, very patient towards all the ignorant things performed by others. All the ignorant things happen in this world. If we cannot change others, we change ourselves. I think this is the best way. And change ourselves is the most difficult. Changing ourselves is the most difficult. Pointing out at others is most easy, right? Changing ourselves, we have to accept our own deficiency first, our own shortcomings, our own weaknesses. Acknowledge them, accept them, open to them, then also we must know it takes time to change. For example, my own experience. After practicing for more than 10 years, I still do not see my change. Having been practicing 10 years as a nun, I do not see my change. After more than 10 years, suddenly I feel that, I change a lot. The way I perceive things become different. The thing which I used to get angry, then I don't react so aggressively. So what I want to say is the change comes very slow. But if you keep on going, you can see the change. It takes time. For my case, it takes more than 10 years. Okay.
I have a different view, talking about ignorance. But at first I try to, accept them. But once you accept them, there will be communications. And my mental state is not so high. The mind will be defined. You become like them, ignorance.
Yep.
So I feel that I will progress. I actually step back in my spiritual life. So I choose to ignore them. don't know where.
Yeah, I think yes. Buddha in Mangala Sutta, asevana cha balanang, panitanan cha sevana, asevana cha balanang. Buddha in Mangala Sutta, the Sutta of Blessing, the first stanza, opening stanza, avoid the fool, associate with the wise. So if you avoid, if you associate with the wise, sorry, if you associate with the fool, your mind also get impure. Your mind also be affected and become impure. So long you don't have the power to change them, instead not to be affected, not to be affected by them, you better disassociate with them.
Because it applies to my family members, sister and brother, even husband.
Yeah.
I find more peaceful if just ignore them.
Yeah. This ignore them means disassociate. This is what Buddha's advice. If you have the power to change other people, then you can associate with those who are more inferior to you. More inferior does not mean that the property, the mental quality. If you have the power, you feel that you can change them, change to those who are inferior to you mentally, then you can associate with them, try to change them. If you feel that you don't have the power to change other people, and by associating with them, you are affected by them, then you should disassociate with them. This is Buddha's advice in the Mangala Sutta. Okay, I think it comes the time for us to have lunch. Thank you.
Sadhu.
Yes.
The fourth
We still have time to go. Okay. Okay, before lunch, we have to recite the contemplation. I'm so, but it's not written here. Where? They didn't give me the paper. So you have to recite. Patisangka. We recite first. No, I can remember by heart.
So we don't use
Reflection on arms foot. Patisangka yoniso pindapadang. Okay. If possible, you all should learn by heart. Only this one. Okay. They don't have, you show them the paper. Some missing.
Yeah,
not complete. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, if you don't have that paper, it's also okay because that paper is not completed yet. The sentence is not completed at all. Never mind, you follow after me. The yellow one. You give me the yellow one.